I will officially welcome you all to the chat box. My name is Dawn Hewitt. I'm from the International Group and the Global Leadership League. For those of you that have joined us previously for a chat box, welcome back, of course. I see some familiar faces. To those of you that are new to us and to this discussion platform, welcome. We created this platform or channel to connect and share and support the community across international education in the absence of all these face-to-face interactions that we would have normally been having at conferences and otherwise. And it's really about providing a platform for empathizing, problem solving with other league members across the globe, really. So thank you for joining us and being a part of. This is the fourth chat box that we're hosting in this region. So I know that many of you aren't based in Australasia, but that's been really nice to have a bit of a voice and that contextual perspective on these topics from our neck of the woods. A few housekeeping notes. You are probably don't even need me to say any of these things, but just if you can stay muted unless you're contributing. And also feel free to interact. It looks like we're probably having a smaller group than anticipated, but I think Amanda would like that interaction, and we're here to have an open discussion. So, but feel free to use emojis on the right-hand side in that chat box, and also feel free to put in any comments or questions or otherwise. Leading us today, we have Dr. Amanda Daly from Griffith Business School at Griffith University. In our region, she is definitely well-known, highly regarded researcher and academic. I was, just before you all came on, I said to Amanda, I was trying to work out when we had met, because it's been really quite a privilege to get to know Amanda in the past years. And we worked out, we think we met each other about 20 years ago when Amanda was first starting her PhD. And I was so
I was an early achiever. I was five.
That's right. That's right. I think that's an understood. Amanda is well known for her research in mobility, and at the time there wasn't a lot happening in that space, so I was so excited to be having the conversations that she was putting out there and encouraging us all to have and to really qualify some of that data. So without further ado, I'm going to hand this over to Amanda, and I'm going to do my best to run the technology in the back end, and over to you, Amanda.
Thank you, Dawn. I'm going to just share my screen. So that's come up. Yep. Okay. As Dawn said, it's been a very long time that we've worked together. And I remember meeting Dawn, and I was thinking this is a powerhouse woman that was leading mobility at Macquarie University. So I guess, you know, we see people from their perspectives and their roles, and perhaps sometimes we don't recognise our own achievements or accomplishments. So today I wanted to talk to you about career planning on the non-plan plan. Are you right, Dawn, to manage the admitting? Hang on, you're muted. Okay, good. Let me just make that work. But firstly, I need to start the session by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the land on which we're meeting. So for me, this is the Gubbi Gubbi people, and pay my respect to elders past, present and emerging, and acknowledging that this always was, is and will be Aboriginal land. So my objectives today when Dawn and I started talking about what we could do, is I wanted to focus first of all on who we are and how we got here. And then talk a bit about some research we've been doing about what a career in international education is, look at our own professional identity and experiences, and then start developing some plans for the next step, or some strategies, I guess, without planning specifically. I don't know, and given there's only a small group, please feel free to share and talk with your mic, because as a teacher, I do that all the time with my students. I really don't like just talking into the screen. But when I started watching The Good Place, when it came out on Netflix, at last I found my kindred spirit in Chidi, because he talks about his whole life has been a torture chamber of indecision, trying to make those plans and make a decision and commit to something and know what you're going to do. And I really don't like making specific plans and committing to specific plans. I recall all of my life as a young child, I wanted to be a teacher. And then when I was getting close to graduating high school, there were way too many teachers and there weren't enough jobs. So I had to suddenly change that plan. And I came up with a wonderful idea, as you can do when you're a teenager. And I was going to become an audiologist and I was going to test the hearing of pilots. It might have been related to the release of Top Gun that sort of influenced that. But, you know, that was my very specific plan. That's where I wanted to go. And I found the shortest degree possible to become an audiologist. And then I decided I didn't want to study anymore, so I was going to graduate. And I graduated. I started working as a speech and language pathologist or a speech therapist. And I decided I loved paperwork. I'm very unusual. I love administration. Give me a big stack of paperwork and I'm in heaven. So someone said to me, it was actually a guidance counsellor, quite ironically, at a high school that I was servicing. And she said, you should do an MBA. So I said, okay. So I was doing the MBA. And at that stage, the particular MBA program had an honours component. And someone said, you should do honours. Okay. And then when I was doing the honours, someone said, you should do a PhD. Okay. So none of it was planned. Absolutely none of it. There were slight plans that I attempted in that I was going to do my PhD on the experiences of volunteers working in Vanuatu because I liked the idea of being in country and gathering my data. And unfortunately that fell through because the person I'd established the relationships within the organisation left. So I had to make a change. And I switched into looking at student exchange. So I have always been passionate about other cultures. I was an exchange student myself. I went to Germany. I learnt German all through high school. I tried to learn it at university, but it wasn't possible in our degree. And I now have instilled the same passion in my children where I've got one who's studying German, one who is obsessed, not just studying Japanese. And then I've got another one who randomly at the age of 7 decided she wanted to start learning Spanish. So none of all of these things have been very planned of where I'm going and where my career has taken me. And it's often weird when people say, well, how did you get there? Could you mentor me? It's like, but I never had a plan. I'm on the non-plan plan. Things just come up and I go, okay. And pretty much that's my life. I don't often say no. So please delete that out of the recording, Dawn, because I'm not good at saying no, and we'll talk about that a bit later. So how all of this, I moved into this space slightly, was I was having coffee with Rebecca Hall, who was one of our ultimate people here in Australia in international education. Our kids were playing, we were watching them in the pool, and we started talking about how did we get here and how could we mentor future generations or empower the next generation of leaders in international education. So we started thinking about, well, how did we get here? What are we supposed to do? Where are we going? And how do we actually get there? So we started looking at some research and we did a big study in Australia and New Zealand looking at people's careers in international education. So what I wanted just to ask, so please take off your mute and share, how, I guess, what job are you doing currently in international education and how has that changed in the last 6 months since COVID has really flipped everything or pivoted, to use that new buzz term, the sector? So Trish, I can see you've got your...
Okay. So I used to teach middle school and high school in Thailand and Korea, and I taught English, and then I married my husband and we decided to move back here in February, so right before COVID, and I was hoping to work at an English center with international students. So students that came over and went to the English Academy Obviously, there's not a lot of those anymore, and nobody's hiring. So I am just kind of hanging out.
Thank you. Thank you. Kathy?
Hi. So I, too, like Trish, used to work in international ed. Up until 2 months ago, I was working with Amerigo Education, regional director for operations with private high school placements. Worked with them for a year. And before them, I worked with Embassy Study Group for 8 years. And prior to that, I've been with EF Education for 17 years. So I've been in the international ed space for about 30 years. My background has basically been in operations, a little bit of student recruitment. So I'm trying to figure out my no plan. And that's why I'm here. Yep. After 30 years as a career, it's quite humbling. And so trying to navigate this as best as I could and network and just continue to reach out to people. So here I am.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Laura?
Hi. I started in international education about over 20 years ago. Originally as a language teacher, high school German and Spanish teacher, taking students abroad, and always thought, this is where it's at. I love the classroom experience, but I love the taking students abroad even more, and the student engagement and watching them change. And then I fell into what started my dream job. After I finished my master's degree, I got a position in study abroad and student exchange at a large public institution. Started as an advisor, became the assistant director, and then I've been a director for the last 10 years at another institution. And COVID's kind of set me back a bit. It's got me rethinking a lot of things in life. So I've got the stability of a job, but there are, I don't know, maybe a little bit of a midlife crisis saying, what am I going to do in the next 15 to 25 years of my life? What does that look like? So I loved your topic of non-plan, because that's pretty much how I've planned most of my career so far.
Yep. Yeah. We're going to talk about that. So yeah. Okay. Amanda.
Yeah. So I'm in an interesting situation. I actually left my job last fall. I was working as an assistant director in the global education office at a small liberal arts school. And Amanda, your story resonated with me so much, because I was like, okay, in high school, a friend said you should do Upward Bound. And then Upward Bound said you should go to college. And then I studied abroad while I was there. And then the study abroad organization was like, oh, you should come work for us in admissions. And so that started my career in international education. And after 2 years there, I transitioned to a coordinator role at the college. And then I moved up the ranks to assistant director. And I was kind of feeling already like, I'm not sure if I want to continue on this path for the next 10, 20, 30 years. And so I planned a career break or gap year, and I went to Brazil. And then I actually have an Australia working holiday visa that's expiring next week that I was planning to use. And so COVID has kind of really impacted my plans to have this sort of gap year to explore different areas. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't know what, where to go from here.
Yep. Yep. Laurie?
Yeah, somewhat similar story. I have loved teaching and training and working in administration for almost 20 years in international ed. My last position was assistant dean at a law school, working with international students on international programs, and was laid off in March. So I'm also looking and exploring. And I think the questions that you have on the handout that you gave us are really good in analyzing what we've loved about our non-plan so far. I've loved the things that I've said yes to. I've taught in Slovakia and worked for a law school in China, and never imagined that I would do some of the things that I've done. Mm-hmm. And so I'm excited about what's next in this non-plan, but also don't have a ton of direction right now.
Yep. Yep. Thank you. Angelica?
Hi. So I've been teaching all around the world. I'm Hungarian and I've taught in Italy and in the UK, and now I'm in the US, and I've been volunteering and working in international education since I was 18, so for quite a long time now. And I've just, I was laid off from a big international company, and I'm not sure if I want to go back to teaching or continue my career in international education. It's always been another option, but right now there's like just nothing. So just trying to figure out what the next step is.
Yep. Yep. Excellent. And is it Eva?
Yeah, it's Eva. Yeah, same story actually. Just as you were saying, master's, PhD, I was like, okay, yep, I'll do that. That sounds great. I am actually teaching marine resource management in the Turks and Caicos Islands at the moment. I've also taught in different places also. And our students, the last 6 months for us, our students left in March. We then had to teach everything online, but we are a field study organization. So we're a study abroad field study. So we teach them how to do field, collect field data, how to look at that and analyze it. And that's pretty difficult online. Yeah. And so having to do that was exceptionally difficult, and trying to put on data, large amounts of data online that students could access was extremely hard. Our summer programs were cancelled, and we just found out yesterday that our fall is also cancelled. Which means I am not working until January of next year. Fortunately, the company has allowed us to kind of stay here because where I am, the COVID situation is actually pretty good compared to where I have lived, which is in the US, and where I was born, which is the UK, which are all two really bad areas. So right now I'm just staying put, but also kind of looking for that next step and what happens if, you know, what the company I work for currently changes the way they do things or not, because of, you know, maybe we still have to do social distancing in the future, and on a boat diving is pretty difficult to do that. So yeah,
it's, I think it's still so very unknown with COVID of what's going to happen. So Dawn and I were talking before the session, and I'm in Queensland. We have 4 cases, of which are people who've returned from overseas, and we still have a lot of freedom. Our theme parks just reopened yesterday, and Dawn's down in Melbourne where they're in lockdown. And we're banning anyone. We've blacklisted anyone from Victoria, which is where Melbourne is. They are not permitted to cross our borders. And we're ready, getting very close to cancelling and blocking off the next state next to us as well. Again, we've just only just opened borders. So it's also very unknown, and I think that makes it extra hard to plan when we just don't know where that's going to go. So the research that we started doing, we know that people who have an international career, the research that is around is about expatriates mainly. I mean, I guess that's bigger money of the people who go abroad for specific business. So there's not a lot of research looking at what pushes people to go abroad. We do know that people who work internationally love traveling. And I think, I remember who said it now, was it Tricia being laid off in February? So February, when COVID really started taking off down here in the Southern Hemisphere, I was in Fiji for work. It was wonderful. And unfortunately we didn't get locked down there and had to stay there. But, you know, love traveling. Wanting to learn other cultures, other languages, going and working in another country. And they have some kind of previous experience. And I'll come to that a bit later. But people who study abroad, about half of them will then work or volunteer in international context. Almost 20% have an overseas career. And about a quarter to a third have some kind of international dimension to their career. So I would say I have an international dimension in that I'm a lecturer. I teach a lot of international students. I'm engaged in things like internationalization of the curriculum, or the new one I'm using is interculturalization of the curriculum. so that we're looking at in different cultures. So I've got that kind of connection, and I still want to, now as a program director, whenever students come and start our program, I have to tell them to go away. I want them to go overseas as part of their program. It's part of my orientation. Come, but now go. So in our research that we did with our big study, and it was interesting as you shared your experiences, we found that there are four key personas amongst people who work in international education. There's the long-timers, the international grads, the globetrotters, and the emerging leaders. So you might see, as I read through these, you might see that you overlap between two, and I'm still working on accepting that I'm now a long-timer. And I, unlike you, Laura, I had my midlife crisis when I was 25, when I left being a speechy. Though I did also study a master's of teaching when I had twins, because I thought maybe having four kids would be easier to be a teacher. And then I went, no, I can't deal with teenagers. I can't deal with students, and they're my own children. So a long timer has been invested in the industry for more than 20 years, probably didn't intentionally seek out that employment in the industry, but they've created their career. So this person was, and I think that was it like you, Amanda, offered a position coming back from an exchange experience. You know, it was a no-brainer. Yep, I'll take that job. Helps me with my reverse culture shock, and it helps empower other students to go. The international grads are those who perhaps in Australia have been international students. They've studied here, had a great experience, loved the education experience, and come back so that they can help further international students. So they looked at the care and the support that the universities or the institutions were providing and wanted to continue that to give to other students. Our globetrotters is pretty much what everyone's been describing. So I'm saying that I'm a long-time globetrotter. Now, we've got multiple intercultural experiences, whether it's you've travelled from where you were born, or like Eva, you were born somewhere, lived somewhere else, and now you're working somewhere else. You know, we've been to different places. So this industry really aligns with our passion. And so now it's about trying to make sure we can keep that passion alive and find new threads and new locations. So this particular respondent in our study was a migrant. They understood those experiences and wanted to engage in others and love learning about new cultures and keep sharing that experience. And then we also have our emerging leaders. So this is where for us with our research, we really wanted to focus on. It's that smaller cohort who are intentionally seeking a career in this space and want to, as this person said, they want to make a better place. It's that gen, the millennials, they want to make the world a better place. They want to give to others and they want to be continuing their experiences. But Dawn, can we share that quick poll of the how did you get here? So I've got two little quick polls I wanted to do. I wanted to ask you, how did you get here? Is it coming up? Do I need to stop sharing? No? Okay, so the poll is, what path did you take to get to your current role? You can pick different options. Did you have an undergraduate degree that's related to your role or unrelated to your role? Did you do postgrad study related to the role or was it unrelated? Did you plan for the job? And then the last one is, I have no idea how really I got here. Okay. Okay, I've got 7 hours, 7 people have finished it. So Okay, so interestingly, some people have done study related to the role. Two people said that they, or two responses also indicated that it was undergrad not related to the role. So I could certainly say that my undergrad had nothing to do with the area, nor did my postgrad. My teaching, you could argue, but I was already in the space by then. But nobody has no idea. Okay, and then the other poll, Dawn? Okay, what experiences have you had that you bring to international education? So again, you can pick different choices. Okay, do you want to lock it again? So overwhelmingly, we've all lived in another country. And for me, I think it was also, I lived in multiple states in Australia. So I've married someone in the military, but I've actually moved more times than he had. So this last house that we bought, which is killing me that I'm in one place, I'd moved 63 times. I've got gypsy blood. I love moving, love new experiences. So I think while it can be living in another country, I think also living in different regions and meeting different cultures and experiences. A lot of people learn another language, the university study tour, hosting an international student, high school, and then having a partner or a spouse from another country. So can I shut that one down? Yep. Oops, there we go. So what we found, this is where you can see if you're average, I don't like that word, but our average respondent in our study works in management. Student mobility was quite a high response. Not a lot of researchers participated in our study. There was some marketing and comms and student mobility. But because our study was done in Australia, most of our people were Australian. Interesting, they were female, and everybody here today in the chat box fits that box, which I noticed as we all logged in. And I think even in previous chat boxes I've attended, it's been more strongly biased towards females. The average age is 44, so I'm above average. We have a post-grad qualification of something, didn't really plan a career, has worked in, on average, is 12 years in the sector. And I guess the key thing is about having that early intercultural experience. So that's what we found, is that if we can get that intercultural experience, whether it is hosting an international student, learning a language, going on study exchange or student exchange or a study tour in high school or university, all of those things then sort of put those seeds, I guess, in very early of where we would like to go. So that's what we're coming out with. Now, this data that I'm presenting here, that 45,000 jobs of 120,000 in Australia are related to international ed, that was pre-COVID. I don't have the latest numbers. But what we do know is that we are still a large and growing industry. And despite COVID, universities, high schools, private sector, language schools, we're all looking at new ways that we can engage with the international education sector. How can we do it? How can we do it online? But particularly in Australia, and I noticed the accent that most of you seem to be from the States, but in Australia, we don't have a specific training pathway. There isn't a bachelor's or a postgrad degree that you can do in international education. So it doesn't set it up from that early point that you can start thinking about a career, perhaps. You've got to start thinking more outside the box. We also don't have what we call a CRC, so a Commonwealth or a government, federally government-funded research centre for international education. International education is our, I think it's number two service sector, export sector in Australia. Tourism is sort of flows between education and tourism, but there is a research centre about tourism. There is a very strong focus on tourism. International education, not so much, and yet we know international education flows into so many different areas. It's not just about having what we would say in Australia, the phrase, bums on seats, of having our students here. It's all that impact on tourism, on the local economy, on accommodation. And from my perspective, so my passion isn't just about our incoming international students, but our globalisation and interculturalisation of our domestic students. So then they're missing out on that experience of interacting with others. It's not quite the same when you're doing it on the screen. So in terms of our career decision making, we know it's not rational. We've already talked about how irrational all of us are of how we got here. And it's all about serendipity, one of my favourite movies. So it's about that professional and personal connection. And I think, Kathy, you were talking about networking, being in the right place at the right time. encouraging others. So I think, you know, particularly given that this is a female heavy sector, you know, those approaches of leaning in and supporting other women, empowering each of us to build our own careers, looking at our previous work and volunteer experience, and just exposing ourselves to different areas that still are within our interest area. So, yep, I've already said that. And I think one of the key points that we found is that there's not a lot of mentoring. So about a third of our people said that they were prompted by a mentor, but there's not a lot of strong mentoring. So I think that's something that we need to be exploring further. But about 70% of us still want to stay in this sector. And this was before COVID. And I think in previous chat box sessions I've been to, that vibe is still there, that we still want to stay in this area. We just don't know how yet. Right. So the skills that we need to survive in a post-COVID world. We need to be adaptable and flexible, creative and innovative, have an entrepreneurial mindset, be critical thinkers, have emotional intelligence, leadership skills, the digital and data literacy, and a commitment to lifelong learning, which I think, you know, we've all expressed that we've done additional studies, etc. These are skills that have come out from some of the big researchers, universities, etc., listing what we need. But if you go back 12 months and you look at the skills that graduates needed to be successful, it's all the same skills. It's just now that we're putting post-COVID into it, or COVID, and it seems to make a whole new paper or a whole new research project, but it's still the same stuff. And I think what I wanted to spend the next 20 minutes or so is reflecting on what we actually have. So this is a beautiful local beach for me. As I do sometimes, I got up at 5 a.m. and I watched the sunrise and I took a photo of it so I could remember that I got up at 5 a.m. to watch the sunrise. But I want to break into a breakout room. So we might just do two, Dawn, given the numbers, to reflect on those questions that I gave you for in the preparation sheet. So looking at your journey so far, thinking about, are you happy in the space you're in? What would you do better or differently? What could you change? And specifically, there we go. So it's recording again. Welcome back. There was lots of good discussion happening in there, which was great. I'm not sure how I can get everybody's faces on the screen again. There we go. So my screen's not sharing anymore, is it? It stopped. Is that sharing again now? Okay, so what I want you to do, and I'm not sure if we'll have enough time to do today, but it's something you can just sort of write down as a box, is to take some time now to leverage your strengths. Think about how you could use your strengths that you've got and use your weaknesses. Think about what are your weaknesses. And there could be, so there was one group I heard about, you know, someone preferring to lead from the back. Well, that might be seen as a weakness rather than leading from the front, but there will be opportunities where we want people who can be leaders who aren't up the front saying, I'm the leader, I'm great, follow me, but are doing the stuff at the back that we need to happen. Assert your differences. So think about what is it that makes you different from everybody else in the room and how you can use that and make that shine to other people. And then most importantly, I think, is pursuing your passions. We've got to find something that still allows us to be passionate and get out of bed and feel excited about what we're doing. You know, sometimes it can, you know, there's parts of our job that perhaps we don't like. I gave a presentation last week about assessment and marking, and as an academic, I have to try and push myself to do marking. I don't like marking. But you know, the passion still for me is the teaching, and that overrides the fact that sometimes I've got to do some marking. So some strategies to move forward. And Dawn and I were just talking about this while you were in the breakout rooms, but make a regular event to plan your career. So some of you right now are taking a forced career break, if we think of that. But use this time to reflect on what is your career and how do you want to move that forward. And then if you then find something and you're no longer on the career break, but or you even now you're not on the career break, still keep taking that time, whether it's once a month, once every 3 months, just checking back in with yourself. Am I staying true to my passion? Am I using my strengths? Where do I want to take this? Doing a stock take, so keeping a record of your achievements and identifying those transferable post-COVID skills. So I've got a little document that it's not my CV. I call it my portfolio. And everything that I do, I put in there. So it's very clearly listed what is it I'm doing and how does that link to a skill I've got. So, you know, I teach management. You could argue careers linked with management. I'm arguing today's presentation is much more about international education. But, you know, what are some of the things that you're doing or you've done that link with those transferable skills and keep that record ongoing? You just keep that separate to a CV or a resume. Becoming more aware of yourself and thinking about who you are, clarifying your ideas, think about what interests you have and follow up on those. You know, is there some other space that you can use your interests and your passions? And if you want, we can share these slides afterwards. Start exploring new opportunities and learning in terms of learning and training. So I think, Kathy, you mentioned about, you know, connecting more with LinkedIn. I'm still not good with that. I saw Dawn promoted this session in it last night. I thought, oh, whoops, I should use my LinkedIn. But, you know, there's training in LinkedIn. There's a whole lot of MOOCs coming out. I don't know if you'd be interested, but the International Education Association of Australia, very long title, IEAA, we now have training modules you can do. And through doing those, I think you've got similar with NAFSA, you can get fellowship. So I've been working on that. Currently, I'm a fellow of international education and I'm working towards senior fellow for international education. So you do those activities, you get points for certain things and you can build that up and you can also do the training modules. But looking for those things. And then I think learning from others and leveraging on others, you know, that networking really connect with those opportunities. So things like the Global Leadership League, other things within your state, within your region. And I think also now that everybody, so I've been teaching online for 15 years, I'm finally glad everybody else is catching up. Now that the world is seeing how great it is to network, regardless of time zone, as long as it's not ridiculously late. I did skip one webinar that was 1 a.m. my time in a suitable time in Britain. But, you know, use those connections, start exploring across because now it's the new normal. I hate using these new phrases and I'm using them more often, but it's the new normal that we are being able to connect and network across the globe. If necessary, connect with a career specialist. So the session that I was referred to in the handout was the one by Spence and Sarah Grosskreutz. So I think is that how I say her surname, Dawn. But I think that, you know, people like that who are specialists in terms of managing career, connect with them, do that reflection and get some specific advice tailored to you. And then find a mentor and also recognize that you can be a mentor. That's part of that networking. You know, you all are bordering on that long timers category. We've all got a lot to give. How can you then share? And, you know, the research around mentoring shows that the people who are mentors get just as much as being a mentee. So try and find that. Stepping outside your comfort zone. So seeing a different area in which you may be able to offer something or connect. So whether it's about looking at companies who are now setting up specifically to do stuff online. So just before the session started, I saw that Open Learning something is connecting with Open Universities Australia to start building micro-credentialing. So there's going to be opportunities for people who can help unpack larger qualifications into those micro-credentials. No, that's slightly outside of perhaps a normal teaching area, but you still need to have those strong understandings of teaching and how you could add in that space. And then setting goals for yourself. So those SMART goals where you're setting the specific, they're measurable, achievable, realistic, and you're giving yourself a time. Now, For someone who doesn't like planning, I hate also setting SMART goals, particularly the T, because I don't want to commit to a set time. So instead of saying, I will do this particular course, or I will do this particular qualification, or I'll do this, I might say, over the next 6 months, I'll say yes 5 times. So I'm not saying, I don't know what I'm going to say yes to, but I'm going to say yes to things. And certainly when Dawn approached me, I kind of went, I can't do anything. Okay. So I did it. So I think look for those opportunities that it's not tying yourself into one little box, because, you know, the boxes would kill me. What I wanted to end with, though I don't know if we've got enough time, we've only got 2 minutes, is I was going to ask you, what's your plan? And that might be too much. And what instead we might do is I've shared a link with you in the chat box, which is a Padlet. And I'll share that on my screen in a second. And in that Padlet, you can write down how you're going to leverage your strengths, how you're going to use your weaknesses, etc., that we talked about before, and then what your plan is. And in doing that, I want you to remember that that is only plan A. There are 25 other letters in the alphabet. What are going to be other plans that you could do? So if I can stop sharing that, and I'll quickly just share the Padlet screen. Is that showing up? Is my Padlet showing? Yep. So to do that, and you can do this after the session, and then I can go into it later on and download it, and we can share when everybody's done it. And you can also do this anonymously if you choose. But you just click on the plus, and then you can write in what your ways that you might leverage your strengths. So if you can take some time, and I guess for many of you, it's getting evening and your brain is shutting down. But take some time. Over the next week, if you want to jump in, put some stuff in there, and then we can share that. And that might help us explore different opportunities that perhaps you hadn't thought of, but Laurie's put something up and you go, actually, Laurie's got a really good point. I could try that in my area. And then we can download this into a, I think I can download it into a PDF or an Excel, and we can share it amongst the group later on for those who were here today. So if you just want to bookmark that.
Yeah, I was just going to piggyback on that, Amanda, and say that as with other chat boxes, we will do a handout, but this one specifically, given it's just this group, we can just...
Has Dawn just frozen or have I frozen? Dawn's frozen.
You know, keep that within... I'm freezing.
Yeah, you're freezing. Well, you know, you're in Melbourne. You're not here in beautiful Queensland. No, I have noticed Kathy took her jacket off and Laura's in a suit.
I know. I'm rugging up. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, but this is Queensland winter. Can you see? This is, you know. Winter for us is this week. So if we can keep it within the group, I think that would be great.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just thought I'd mention that. I am conscious of time, and I just want to thank you, Amanda, so much for leading this such an important conversation that's sensitive and also really drawing on all sorts of concepts that we can really reflect on. For myself, I'm very limited work as well, so I have a lot of extra time to be, refocusing my energies on things like the chat box, but also what next for me and how am I making contributions. So I've taken all sorts of notes, and I really want to interrogate that that sheet and participate in the Padlet that you've put out there. Thank you to each and every one of you that have come along today and shared your story. And I would just like to encourage you to just keep getting involved, because some days we're a little bit less motivated than others. Mm. And it's easy to sign up for something and then just say, oh, I think I'm just a little bit I'm in a funk. But so congrats for showing up today, and it's so nice to see your smiling faces. We look forward to seeing you at the next chat box, which is in Australian time as well. And that's on the 22nd of July, so the 21st for you. Sorry, the 23rd for the rest of you in North America. And that is, sorry, I'll just give you the title before we go because I went off that page. And that one is, this one's a really about future thinking and big leadership type discussion. And so this one's called Reimagining Global Education. And this is the implications for leadership. So how are these new challenges that we're facing on a daily basis, and we have no idea how long into the future, what sort of skill sets within our leadership toolkit are we needing, and how are we augmenting those to be an effective leader? And that's being led by Rebecca Hall, who Amanda actually mentioned earlier, and Dr. Douglas Proctor from University College Dublin. So that one should be quite a good discussion. Again, thank you all. Thank you so much, Amanda.
Thank you.
And yep, definitely look forward to seeing you all again at the next league event.
Okay. Good. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.